regular guy radio.
I just don't care.
That must be
regular guy radio.
Well, like Brian, for example.
That little prick.
Oh, boy, it feels great.
Oh, sorry, I forgot how much Doug Reamer cares about kids.
Pontiac Firebird, the car I've always wanted, and now I have it. I rule.
The cannonball! Cannonball coming.
We got $70, we got a pair of girls on the pass. We're safe as kittens, okay?
I know that, dude.
I had an awesome time.
Yes, I did have an awesome time. Hey there, everybody. It's Brian Shea with Regular Guy Radio back a little bit later than I had originally planned on doing the show. I'd hoped to do them on Wednesdays every other week. This one's delayed. It's episode 20 coming out on Saturday, October 13th coming out. But I got a good reason why I kind of delayed this one a few extra days.
We're going to give Daddy the Rain Man suite. You dig that? We're going to Vegas, Mike.
Vegas! You think we get there by midnight?
Money, we're going to be up 500 by midnight.
Yeah! Vegas!
Vegas, baby! Vegas!
Yeah, I went to Vegas, baby. I went there. I did my first solo trip to Vegas. My second trip ever to Vegas. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Also have a great interview coming up later. A great interview coming up later as we continue. We're going to have somebody talking on every show, and this week music fans hopefully will enjoy this one. But a few other things have been going on since my last show. I hope you all enjoyed episode 19 with Charlie Todd from Improv Everywhere. If you're a new listener, thanks for adding this as a subscription. I hope you pass this on to somebody else. Hope the listener numbers keep going up each time. We're going to be getting some really good guests. Charlie was a great way to start, and I'm really psyched about the one we're going to have in this episode. But since then, there's been a couple pieces of great news. First of all, I don't know how many people heard this, but Comedy Central is bringing a tremendous show to their airwaves. Matt Stone and Trey Parker, the South Park guys, have bought the rights to Kenny versus Spenny. And if you don't know about Kenny versus Spenny, you better find it when it comes on later this year. I think it's coming on November 14th. It's going to premiere. Put it on your DVR, your TiVo, whatever, because Kenny versus Spenny is quite perhaps one of the greatest television shows ever made. Kenny and Spenny are two Canadian filmmakers, and they're best friends, but they're polar opposites, and they have contests every week, like who can lose the most weight or gain the most weight. What were some of the other ones? Who can stay on a cow the longest? Who can stay blind the longest? Where they were supposed to be blind. Of course, Kenny cheated the entire time, which was just hilarious. So they were doing some new episodes, but they're also running some classic ones. They should be on Game Show Network. I just absolutely love Kenny versus Spenny, and I'm hoping I can try and get in touch with Kenny. I really want to have him on the show because Spenny's a big pussy. So, but other great news recently, and this really affects on me and my listeners here in Pennsylvania. There might be some light at the end of the tunnel, and the just retarded Pennsylvania beer laws could be changed. Senate committee has cleared the way for six packs of beer to be sold at beer distributors, and that is just a wonderful, wonderful thing. Oh, yeah, baby. Six packs of beer. If you don't know how things work in Pennsylvania, you can only buy six packs in bars or restaurants that sell beer. If you have to go to a beer distributor to buy cases or kegs, and if you want liquor or wine, you have to go to a state store. So, you know, it just gets ridiculous sometimes.
I just don't care.
Yeah, you just feel like you just don't know what you want to do. You know, you got to do all this stuff just to get beer. So, now they're hopefully going to change laws. It's still got to go through the Senate and all that. But, you know, we're going to hopefully make things a little more liberal like they are in Vegas, where I just got back from the other day. It was great. Here was the deal. I was supposed to go with my niece and nephew, but things fell through. You know, good reasons. They had good reasons. They couldn't make it. But I was just so fucking psyched. I couldn't turn it down. You know, I just could not go. It had been a year since I'd been. My first trip was a year ago with my wife. We went for our anniversary. Great time. So I wanted to go back without her. A little bit different vibe. Do a little bit different stuff. And then when they fell through my traveling companions, it's like, well, I'm just going to go myself. So I booked room in the Imperial Palace because I'm not needy. I'm not picky. And it was a good price. And I flew out on Saturday. And was coming back on Tuesday. And I just had a friggin' blast. I pretty much broke even. Did not really see much hooker action like I did last time when I got propositioned and turned it down. Maybe it's because I was at the IP and, you know, just rolling a little low. But played a lot of poker, a lot of blackjack. Well, a decent amount of blackjack. Went downtown for the first time. And that was really cool to go downtown and see that kind of stuff, that kind of vibe going on. But, you know, you ran into a few people that you know, the tables you really didn't like.
Fucking idiot!
And one guy who was basically demanding that everybody at the poker table have pleasant conversation. And if you're demanding, I don't want to have pleasant conversation with you, you jackass. But then also I ran into some really fun people and had a great time. I played a couple poker tournaments and didn't do well in either one.
This sucks.
And just play a lot of other regular poker and just kind of hung out. But it was a really, really good time. And I'm definitely going to do it again. You know, I think being able to go to sleep when I want to, get up when I want to, do that kind of stuff, it's cool. I'll go with the wife again. But going to Vegas all by myself was something that I'd wanted to do. And I didn't want to do it on my second trip, but it worked out. I got a bunch of comps, which is cool. Didn't go see any. I was going to go see some comedians, but things just didn't work out. Did real good in my sports gambling, which was nice because that's, you know, sometimes a weak spot. But, you know, frickin' Ravens screwed me, but, you know, I should have known better than to bet on the team I root for. But it was beautiful out there. It's like 95 back here in Pennsylvania, 90-something like that over the weekend. There's 75 and cloudless skies. It was just beautiful in Vegas. So if you haven't gone to Vegas, either with someone or solo, I definitely recommend it because it's just possibly one of the greatest cities on the earth.
You could power a city with this. I am useless. I am a man. I am the smallest giant ever. I am the smallest giant ever. Don't know how long it's gonna last. Everything's moving fast. I am the smallest giant ever. I am the smallest giant ever. Everything you've ever said is brilliant.
My guest this week is the Vice President of Music Programming for the online music service Rhapsody, but many people might know him better as the lead singer for the rock band Too Much Joy, which had a reunion concert earlier this year, playing together for the first time in 10 years. So, Tim Quirk, welcome to Regular Guy Radio.
Well, thanks for having me. And sorry to start off with a correction, but it wasn't really a reunion concert because we never broke up.
Oh, that's true. I have that on my list of things to talk about, and I even screwed it up in the intro. That's just fantastic, isn't it? Great way to start off.
It's just a point of personal pride with me that I always said we'd never be the Who and say, we're going away. Oh, we're back. But now we're going away. Oh, we're back.
So you were together but apart, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah, we just hadn't felt like playing for 10 years, and then all of a sudden we did, so we did.
Now, will this one show lead to more for people like me who couldn't get there and want to see you guys?
Well, never say never, but it's hard for me. And the thing is, it was so much fun for us. I had such a blast doing it. It's hard to imagine having that much fun ever again. And So my personal preference, and I'm not speaking for the band here, this is just me.
Mm-hmm.
My personal preference is that if we never play again, I want that to have been the last show. Because what had previously been the last show had been something where we had no idea it was going to be the last show. It was just a random, you know, half-assed drunken gig in some crappy shithole of a bar in San Diego after a street fair.
Oh, you even remember where it was. That's what I was going to ask.
Oh, yeah, I remember exactly where it was, because I spent 10 years going, damn, I wish that hadn't been the last show.
Now, I'm kind of bummed out because I've actually never seen you guys live. I was not able to make it up to this show, and I feel stupid because I lived in the Baltimore area in the early 90s, which you guys seemingly were playing there for WHFS about every other week.
Yeah, and you know, it was weird as the career, which I feel silly saying without quotation marks around it, progressed. You know, we ended up with, you know, as radio airplay waxed and waned, we ended up with a couple of areas of the country where we could always do well no matter if, you know, whether or not we had a new record out.
Mm-hmm.
And Baltimore, D.C. was one of those. Boston was another. Columbus, Ohio, for some reason, was one where it didn't matter if we were getting played on the radio. There were enough people who had enough drunken fun the last time through that they'd all come out again. And actually, the audience would grow because they'd sort of grab their friends or roommates or whatever by the lapels and say, yo, you got to come see these guys.
You have a friend in Cincinnati who's seen you guys a bunch of times, I think both there and in Columbus.
Yeah.
Now, you're mentioning cities, so this brings me to something I had written down and wanted to ask you here. There's a friend of mine who lives in Seattle, and for years he said he misheard one of the lyrics in Crush Story as, I'm the smallest guy in Denver. And then I'm listening to some of the things you put on the website, and you actually sang that in a version. I think it was one of the outtakes from Live At Least. Do you remember?
Yeah,
do you remember doing that, and why?
Oh yeah, we did it because we'd enough people had told us that they thought that's what we were singing. That just as a goof, we started singing it.
So Eric wasn't the only one who misheard that then.
No, I think it ended up, there was some book, you know, somebody did a couple, like 10 years or more ago. Probably a lot more like 15 or so, of misheard lyrics, you know, like, mm-hmm. Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy by Jimi Hendrix and things like that. And I think The Smallest Guy in Denver made it into that thing. I think that's where we first heard about it, and then we just started singing it that way. Not every night, but sometimes. Depended how drunk we were.
Well, he had mentioned it to me just in passing, talking about the band one time, and then I was listening to that MP3, and I about shit when I heard it, because I'm like, there's no way. I couldn't believe that you guys had you know, picked up on it and then actually did it. That was pretty funny.
Yeah.
Is that pretty much par for the course for your kinds of shows, for people who might not have even listened to them online or in some of this live stuff you've released?
Yeah, it's you know, you never know. Some nights are serious, somewhat serious, but you know, I when you, particularly when you're on a long tour,
mm-hmm.
As a fan of bands, you know, as a guy that has gone out to a lot of shows, I always hate the feeling that I'm just watching some band go through the motions and, you know, the second song of the set is always the same thing every night and the banter between songs is always exactly the same and they know exact, you know, they have it timed to exactly how long the set's going to run. They know exactly how many encores they're going to do. They know the fact that they're going to do encores, all
right.
That kind of bullshit. Just my personal aesthetic hates that kind of thing. It just feels, you know, like anti what the type of music I like is all about. So we prided ourselves on you know, being like snowflakes. Too Much Joy show should be like snowflakes. We never did the same one twice.
The Kinks came to my college. I went to school in Northwestern Pennsylvania, and it was like a medley. It was an hour-long song. They just wanted to get the hell out of there. And I had actually seen them in the summer at Merriweather Post, and it was a great show, like 2 years before. And it was just terrible because you're right. They knew exactly how they were going to go, and they were going to get their check and just get the hell out of town.
Yeah, so we try to, you know, we try to make every night different, and more importantly, you know, make it be, God, I don't know how to say this without sounding like a pretentious motherfucker. But the performance should be informed as much by the venue and the crowd and everything else that is going on, as it is by the band and the fact that, you know, we know the songs. So pretty much the, you know, we try to have a lot of interaction with the audience and just sort of incorporate whatever the fuck is going on in our lives that day, whatever's going on in that club, whatever, you know, is going on in the audience into the show.
Yeah,
you know, to the point where the audience will often become an integral part of the show, whether it means we're yanking random people up on stage or we're jumping down into them. Or I remember one time we played somewhere around Baltimore, when I think it was in Maryland or on the border of Jersey or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was I think we were opening for somebody, so there weren't a ton of people in the club when we were playing, and yet the club had hired these big beefy security guys whose job was to stand at the foot of the stage with their big muscled arms crossed over their big muscular chests, intimidating people away from, you know, like apparently they had some problem with stage diving at the club or something. And it was ridiculous because nobody was even coming anywhere near us. And I think the guy had a hat or something. Or no, I think he was just standing there. And so, you know, I made him part of the show. And I just started goofing on him and making jokes about how pointless his presence was. And I may have stood on his shoulders or something. I don't remember exactly what I did. But I do remember that at the end of the set, he slammed me against the wall. And him and all his bouncer friends wanted to kick the shit out of me because they thought I'd been, well, because I had been ridiculing them all during our set. And the guy was pissed off, and he was saying, like, you don't make me part of your show. I was like, dude, you were touching my stage. And if you touch my – when it's like, it's only 45 minutes a night, but for that 45 minutes, I own that motherfucking stage. And if you don't want to be part of my show, you don't touch my stage. And I don't know, there was something about – it was one of those situations where I was about to get my nose broken. And there was something about how forcefully I said what I said that just sort of took all the wind out of him. And you could see, like, he no longer had any desire to punch me. He just wanted to get as far away from me as he possibly could.
So every Too Much Joy show had to have a story that went with it, it seems like.
Well, they didn't have to, but the better ones always did, and they tried to make every show better than the last one.
One of the funniest things, it wasn't exactly you guys, but the DVD, the disc, or Dante's Inferno, The Go-Go's, the dancing on the stage with the Go-Go's with your mm-hmm. in your underwear. How did that all happen? Just tell me a little bit about. I mean, I can imagine in my mind how I'd get to there, and I'd probably do it. But you know what? I'd have a lot less riding on it than you guys, maybe.
Jägermeister is the short answer to your question.
That's the answer to mine too, actually.
Yeah. No, I think that it was the. I'm pretty sure that was the last night of our run with them. And we'd been talking about doing something anyway. And so I don't know. We just came up with that.
How was it touring with the Go-Go's? How long were you playing with them?
It wasn't too long. It was they had, I think they had something like a 3-month run, and we were on like half of it, something mm-hmm. like that. Touring with them was great. They were at a state, you know, it was like their second or third reunion tour or whatever. And they were at a stage in their lives and their career where they were completely even keeled and realistic about what they were accomplishing and why. So there was no diva attitude or anything like that. But yet they still had a spark that actually, you know, a lot of bands you tour with, you don't bother watching them night after night after night, but it was pretty fucking fun watching the Go-Go's every night. I actually respected them. And they were friendly, you know, which is always a big plus when you're on the road. They were friendly to the point that they gave us permission to tell the press that we were sleeping with them. And although depressingly, we didn't, I at least speaking for myself, I didn't actually sleep with any member of the Go-Go's. But when we left the tour, the last night I think was in Detroit on Thanksgiving, and then Red Cross picked up after us and continued on the second half of the tour. And I think Red Cross actually did end up sleeping with them, or at least certain of them. One of them might have even gotten married. I'm not quite sure if that's true or not. But the other way the Go-Go's were super nice to us was that last night of the tour, they invited us all back to their hotel. You know, we were staying in some crappy Days Inn somewhere.
Right.
They were at the Four Seasons in Detroit. It's hard to imagine there is a Four Seasons in Detroit.
I was just going to say that.
Apparently there is. So they invited us back to the Four Seasons. So we're hanging out with them in the bar. And just hanging out with Jane and Belinda. And they're being very nice. And Clem Burke and some other guy from the Romantics show up. Because it's Detroit. It's their town. And they're trying to get the Go-Go's to come off with them to some happening rock and roll party. And it's very clear from the way they are pointedly ignoring us and speaking directly to Belinda that we're not invited. And the nicest thing, one of the nicest things anyone's ever done for me in my life is Belinda Carlisle looks at them and goes, no, we are hanging out with our friends Too Much Joy. So she basically blew off the Romantics to hang out with Too Much Joy, and the Romantics had to slink away.
Well, that's what any person in their right mind, I think, would do.
Yeah.
The Go-Go's were actually the first band I ever saw in concert, so they have a special place in my heart. I saw them open for the Police, I guess, in like 81 or 82. I was 13, and when you're 13 and you see five girls playing on stage, you're pretty pumped up about something like that.
Yeah, the Police were the first band I ever saw in concert, but it was a couple of years before that. It was on the Regatta de Blanc tour.
Okay, mine was the next one, The Ghost in the Machine, and it was one of my brothers took me, and then it was, you know, you're 13, there's five, you know, pretty good looking chicks up there playing, and it's just the best night in the world. And I remember buying their The Greatest Hits CD years later when it, you know, it was starting to buy CDs of everything, and the fat, goofy jackass working at the record store said something like, oh, some things never come into style. And I was like, dude, you're selling me a CD. You shouldn't really be commenting on people's places in society right about now. But you know,
the first lady I ever saw on stage was probably Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. I saw her with Jules Holland, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts, and XTC, and I was with some friends. This was shortly after Too Much Joy had formed the band, although I don't think we were called Too Much Joy at the time. I think we were still called The Rave back then. And we were just learning how to play our instruments, and we just played our first couple of shows. And so I was with some friends who were well, probably calling them fans of the band was going too far. they were supporters of our band. And I remember sort of being bummed out by Joan Jett and the Blackhearts because it was too professional. Every song stopped on a dime, and I said to one of my friends, "No, this isn't real because they're, you know, they have cues. They know exactly when they're supposed to stop." And the person looked at me and said, "Isn't that the fucking point?" And I was like, "No, it's." And I still feel this way.
Not in a concert. No,
that's not the point. I like shows where, you know, you don't always stop in the same place in the same song every night. You never know when it's supposed to happen.
Sitting on my couch, trying to decide what's appropriate. It's kind of strange. Don't worry about me, and cope with it.
I want to thank Tim Quirk for joining me here on Regular Guy Radio. Unfortunately, had a little technical difficulties, and that was only about half the time Tim and I talked, so I'm a little disappointed. And I guess it goes with the territory of figuring out what to do with these things. So we had a real good conversation after that, talking about the state of music today. Tim works with Rhapsody. He's vice president there, like I said in the beginning, and it's one of the music sharing or downloading services, and you can listen to stuff on there. And Tim is just really a big advocate of opening a lot of doors. And we talked a lot about how services like Rhapsody can let you rediscover music and maybe just buy that one track or just listen to that one track, and how great it is that now we're in a great era that with satellite radio, with services like Rhapsody, you can really expand your music base. And I'm listening to music that I never thought I'd find, and I'm also going back and buying things that I forgot about. Like, I might have only want one song from a band that I listened to growing up. So it was really good conversation talking about that. And the last funny thing we were talking about is Tim was talking about how he came to work for Rhapsody, and you know, it was his first real job and all this stuff. And he was talking about his wife and dealing with all that, getting ready to go back into the working world. And his wife is Donna. And if you're not Too Much Joy fan, one of their big hits. Well, one of their, you know, as big as they get for Too Much Joy. Unfortunately, they weren't. They should have been bigger. They should have been bigger, and hopefully you'll listen to them. But one of their hits is Donna Everywhere. And he said his wife is very quick to point out that Crush Story, the song which led in the interview, is the story about his wife, not Donna Everywhere. And if you listen to the songs, go to Rhapsody and buy them. You'll figure out what is so funny about that. But that is it for this week. You can email questions, suggestions, ideas in to radio@regularguycolumn.com or leave them on the blog or the comments for the blog for this posting, and I'll be back in about a week or week and a half, with another great musical guest. This one's going to be really fun. I've already recorded it. Make sure you tune in, and pass on the news about Regular Guy Radio to your friends, and keep checking out regularguycolumn.com, blogging just about most days during the week, and I hope you enjoy it. Leave comments, tell me what you think, send me an email, and we'll have lots of fun. So thanks for listening, and we'll be back in a couple weeks with another episode.
I'm out.
That's a little joke. Okay, comedy show's over. Bye-bye.